Welcome to the Early Years Web Summit with me, Cathy Brody of CathyBrody.com. In this summit, we're exploring children's personal, social and emotional development, and especially strategies for supporting this key area of development for young children. Today, I am thrilled to be joined from Australia by Sandy Phoenix. Sandy is the founding company director and principal facilitator at Phoenix Support for Educators. She's highly regarded as a speaker, coach, mentor and professional development facilitator for the education and care sector in Australia. Sandy is well known for her CUPS philosophy that has revolutionised the way that educators understand and support children's behavioural learning. This concept has recently been developed into a resource, the Phoenix CUPS Kit, which is now available for educators, and I'm hoping we'll get a look at that at the end of the interview here. But welcome to the Early Years Web Summit, Sandy Phoenix.
Thank you so much, Cathy. Yeah, I'll be excited to show you about that. We're all pretty pumped about it around here. And it's so good to be here at the summit with you. I watched it last year and it was exciting stuff. So I'm really keen to be a part of it.
No, I think this is going to be really interesting to hear about something brand new that I've certainly never seen before. So this is going to be really, really interesting for me as well. We're looking particularly on this summit of personal, social and emotional development. So can we start by discussing a bit about children's sense of well-being in the setting, whether that's a childminder, daycare or any other setting really. What can we do in these settings to help children's well-being?
Yeah, look, my advice here, my key advice that I think that I live by constantly is let's just follow those children's lead. We really don't need to have some amazing insight and have read 50,000 textbooks on anatomy and children's development to know what they need to meet their own needs for well-being at any point in time. The children are magically wired to do what they need to do to fulfill their sense of well-being at any point in time. So what we can do is we can mess that up by interrupting and interfering with children's natural movements. And at that point, that's where we have to start to compensate and work out where we've gone wrong. Mm-hmm. But if we just back off a bit, and if we just watch what's happening, we actually, like for example, we really don't need to know exactly when upper body strength is going to start to be developed. We see children start to hang off monkey bars or hang off anything that their parents don't want them to hang off, and often break things in that way, hang their body upside down, pull it all the way up. When we say, go for it, let me facilitate that, how can I resource this space to help with your learning, then well-being just happens. When we say, stop it, don't do that, sit down over here and open this book, for example, then we're going to start to get interruptions with the child's sense of well-being because their development is being disrupted.
Yeah.
So one last thing that I often always say is if you're confused or you're not sure about how to create this space for the child to develop properly, then just plonk them outside. That's all we need to do. Put children outside. That's where they develop best. All of the seven senses can then be, the child can experience all of the seven senses and start to integrate those senses. There's natural resources, loose parts. There's things to climb off and swing off and throw and lift and pull and push, and amazing things happen. I think where we're starting to find issues with this is when we put children in captivity and we hold them in four walls all day, and then we say, I wonder what's wrong with them. So, yeah, that's my hot tip. Just let them do what they've got to do. Yeah.
You've said the seven senses there. Can you tell us about the extra two senses? Because we normally talk about the five senses. What are the extra two senses you're talking about there?
Yeah, well, thanks for asking. I guess there is many different theoretical frameworks that throw in another couple or two. You know, Montessori has some and Stein has some. But from a biological perspective, we're talking about two scientifically known senses of proprioception and vestibular. So children know when they need to develop, for example, vestibular, because they'll start to exercise their ability to balance. and look for opportunities to balance, and usually risky opportunities where parents and educators and carers are saying, get down from there, don't balance on that. But the child's just saying, I'm just exercising my vestibular system, please don't touch me. And if we don't touch them, then their vestibular system develops nicely. Of course, you know, we might need to throw some crash mats underneath in case they fall, or support them to do their own risk analysis there. But yeah, so proprioception and vestibular are good things to know about. And thank goodness for Google, I don't even have to talk long about it. You guys can research.
Yeah, and I think that's really interesting, the way that all the different senses all come together like that as well. I know that you talk a lot about challenging behaviour. How would you describe challenging behaviour, and what sort of things do you hear from educators and practitioners about challenging behaviour?
Yeah, first of all, I tend to not use the term challenging behaviour. I often say to educators, tell me about the behaviour that challenges you. Because let's be real, what challenges one person, the next person calls spirited. So, you know, it's challenging. And the things that challenge me are often really different to the things that challenge my colleagues and vice versa. So, you know, it's those behaviours that just push our buttons for our own reasons. So we really have to own that and understand why. But then when we look deeper at that behaviour that's challenging an educator, I often hear about aggression as being one of those things that is at the top of the responses that I'm going to work on. You know, I'm responding to aggressive behaviour in childcare services all of the time, because that's where it becomes an exclusion risk. That's where there is this, we've got duty of care to these 30 and we've got this one doing this. And a lot of the time as an inclusion support role, I'm coming in to support that child who's displaying these aggressive behaviours, to try and work out how to be a part of this community a little better. Often what I see and when I'm watching the child who's being aggressive in one, and that's really ambiguous, let's say he's punching, hitting, kicking and spitting, often I see irritability. And a lot of that time, that irritability is happening inside. So again, I'm a huge advocate for let's get him outside. I'm often told it doesn't really happen outside, or if it does, it happens right before the transition to inside, because he knows that he's only been allowed to go outside for 45 minutes and now he has to come in again.
And of course, for some challenging behavior, what happens is they actually have their playtime taken away. You're not going to go outside and play. Have I panicked you?
Oh my goodness, these poor children. Yes, that's exactly what happens, particularly in, I noticed this in our culture, particularly in schools. That's quite likely to happen in primary schools. And when it's happened to my boys in the past, I've had things to say about it. I can see us educators and teachers trying to just get a handle on things and try and have some control over the situation, and we'll use that as this kind of time out. Yeah. But it's not effective. It actually doesn't work.
So
if it worked, then there'd be evidence behind it and it'd be written into our policies and we'd be doing it. But it actually doesn't work. So we need to doing the opposite and just saying, well, it looks like you need some time outside. How about you go out and you have two lunch breaks today?
Yeah.
That would be more effective. It's quite shocking to me that we treat children quite differently to the way we treat adults. And if one of our colleagues was saying, you know, we work down here in what we call the dungeon, which is office suites that are underground, and we can't see outside. There's no windows. So often one of us will say, oh, look, I'm just feeling really agitated. I need to go and see the sunlight. Yeah. And if one of my employees said that and I just kind of took that away from her or him and said, no, I don't think you will actually. You're going to stay inside because you haven't met targets this morning and I'm not particularly happy about your work. So you just sit there and think about it. And in fact, you're not going out for your lunch break either. Like, it's just absurd. But it's okay to do that to children. All right.
Yeah. And I think that's so true, isn't it? I think very often if you say, with a lot of things, if you say, would you treat an adult like that? It'd be, oh, no, obviously. But they're only a child, or they are a child, which is like, it is. It's pretty appalling, isn't it? So often the behaviour isn't, although the children display the behaviour, the challenge comes from the fact that as adults, we are challenged by that behaviour rather than the behaviour itself being challenged. So that's kind of where we start with the challenging behaviour. Where did the Phoenix Cups come from then? Where do they fit into this picture?
Yeah, so I was teaching about this for a long time, about children's behaviour, and I was getting less and less time with educators. There was a time where I had weeks and weeks with them to coach them and mentor them. And then as my career changed and evolved, I was getting a couple of hours at a time. So I had to get really efficient at delivering the best bits of my message. So way back in about 2002, I actually attended a presentation by Dr. Marky Carter, who's well known here in Australia for her work as a psychologist, and her work introduced me to choice theory and the work of William Glasser, and Dr. William Glasser's work, who I have come to know very well and love very well over the many years since 2002. And then a few years into my study of Glasser's work and study of psychology as well, I was teaching some educators in one of these short sessions about children's behaviour using an eclectic variety of theoretical frameworks. And I was talking a bit about this and a bit about that and a bit about Glasser, and it was all coming together in the children's behaviour is a function that is being driven by a basic human life need. So it has that function behind it of this is a need and the child is trying to meet this need with their behaviour, was the gist of it. And I was trying to, we had a really visual group in front of us, trying to work out how to explain this. And so there was just water glasses on the table. I said, all right, this is the need for freedom, and this is the need for fun, and this is the need for power. And let's just imagine we've got to fill all those all day. And then I went, oh gosh, that's brilliant. I am a genius. Because at that point, everybody just went, okay, I get it. Okay. Because I was talking theoretical frameworks and pedagogical approaches, and I was freaking people out. I started to talk about cups, and everyone went, right, I get cups.
Yeah.
And it's not that they don't have the capacity to understand the psychobabble I was starting to go on with, but what they were, their brain was full. Educators have so much going on. The last thing they need is 50 other theories that they don't have never heard about before. And so just to pull it all together and say, there's five cups, let's fill them. It went from there. So the cups framework was born, and I was teaching it for many years, and people kept emailing me and saying, I can't find anything about the cups. And I'd say, for the last time, I've told you, go and look at Maslow's work, Glasser's work. They don't talk about cups, but, you know, you'll get the gist. So by popular demand, we've actually developed a kit and a whole philosophy, we call it, and a framework for services to implement using the cups philosophy.
Yeah, so tell me about, what are the cups' name? Are they sort of specific areas, specific names?
Yeah. So they're certainly heavily based on Glasser's choice theory.
Right.
The training itself actually is influenced by a few other theoretical frameworks and my own work. But the cups are very similar to Glasser's work. So
oh, there they are. Visuals. Excellent.
Visual. This is from the cups kit. This is our mounted piece that hangs in the foyer so you can talk to parents about it. So that's fun. And then we have power, freedom, love, and survival. So those, it's that basic. Fill those cups and we have happy children with a strong sense of well-being.
Yeah. And I can see, as you say, it's very visual. You can see that if that love cup is empty, then you've got a problem, haven't you? And that's,
see, you haven't even done the training yet. It's ridiculously simple. If we have an empty love cup, we all know what an empty love cup feels like.
Yeah.
And we know what we need to do to fill it.
Exactly. So that's a really nice, simple way, as you say, of putting over some really complex theories and psychology that's been developed over decades, centuries in some cases. But that's a really nice, clear, visual way of showing. And I love the idea of hanging it in the hallway as well, so you can share that with parents. Because I think that's so important, isn't that, the home learning environment and taking that home as well.
Yeah, or sometimes parents are so grateful. I end up doing the training for parents as well. So, and a lot of the time I come back and do the training once a year with services, because they've got new team members in that are saying, what are these cups that everyone's talking about? But the other thing that used to happen is educators would email me and say, can you tell me the name of the cups again? Because we've actually just now remember fun and freedom, and that we forgot the rest, or, you know. So that doesn't happen anymore, because they've got that constant reminder.
Yeah. And I think that's really, really useful. As you say, there's so many other things going on. And I think that's the same for educators around the world, the constant pressure of more and more things having to do. Having something really simple and visual is so beneficial for everybody. So just thinking on a practical basis, because a lot of what I'd like out of the summit is those practical strategies that people can take away. How can educators and practitioners apply some of those theories actually in their settings?
Yeah, look, it's as simple as filling cups. So the cups kit and the training works you through step by step how to develop a list of practical strategies around each cup. But the general gist of that is, what can we do to fill cups? Reflect on a behavioural incident. Behavioural incidences and meltdowns and whatever challenging behaviour that you're having is actually your best research tool and learning tool. So take that as a blessing if you had a bad day, because you're going to learn something out of this. So let's reflect on it. What cups were empty? How did I contribute to that? What did I do to empty cups? What did I do to fill cups today? Yeah. And what can I do tomorrow to make sure this cup gets full so I don't have a repeat of the same behaviour? So, for example, I do know a lot of practitioners, and I'm not sure how things look like there, but certainly, and I assume from colleagues I speak to, it's much the same. Sometimes they make a decision to teach children in large groups. Mm. So they bring children together for a group time or a circle time. Yeah. And that time is often mandatory. So what we have during that time is a child who might be just not ready for that, particularly from a sensory perspective. He's still developing and integrating his senses, and he needs to be outside. Yeah. So he or she will sit there fidgeting and rolling around on the floor, climbing under each other, over each other, making funny noises. And during that time, the educator does all sorts of things to manage the child's behaviour. Yeah. And I also don't learn that term, use that term management either, but that's a conversation for another day. But they'll attempt to manage that behaviour. And then what happens is the child, during that group time or circle time, the child's freedom cup gets emptied, their love cup gets emptied, their fun cup gets emptied, the power cup, power recognition, competence control, all goes in one cup. Emptied, thrown across the room, and so we get a child who reacts appropriately for when you have empty cups, and he'll have a meltdown, or he'll yell and scream, or call the teacher something that she may or may not have deserved, and then it's meltdown time. So we can reflect on those and ensure that during that time we're filling cups.
Yeah.
So giving children, how can I fill a freedom cup right before I'm about to do group time? How can my decision to do group time respect the child's need to have a full power cup or a full freedom cup?
Yeah.
And we can just make tiny little decisions during that time that are cup filling, or we could make just minute changes and they're cup emptying. Mm-hmm. So just being mindful to fill cups, it's that easy. And, I could give you 5 billion strategies, but you're going to come up with the best ones for you as soon as you start thinking along those lines.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was something I was going to pick up on, that I'm guessing it's going to be a different strategy for each child. Each child's freedom cup is going to be filled in a different way. And as an educator and tuning into the children, you're going to know that child and know what it is that really will fill that cup for them. And as you say, that might be some really simple strategies you've got in place. But sometimes it's just remembering that, just thinking about it. if it's giving them a 5-minute countdown or something, that whatever it is, you need to remember to do that. And maybe just having the cup sat on the windowsill just triggers that memory, doesn't it? Just that thought.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And in the training, we also nut out how to understand the child's different needs profile. So actually, we all have different size cups. So I have like a really massive cup for power recognition, competence and control. It's huge. So thank goodness I'm the boss. And I think that's why I'm the boss. But not that actually I'm not really the boss, because I hired somebody to be the boss and she's way better at it than me. But I like to make all of the decisions and I like to be involved in kind of everything, everywhere. It drives my partner crazy that I need to read an order off the menu and he can't, because I do it because of my huge power cup. And we can identify with each other who have huge power cups. We get each other, we understand each other. And I'm talking about my cup so you can start to think about your own. But then I also have a really small, tiny, incy-wincy survival cup. So I can 5 hours sleep, come to work sick, and I don't need food for a while. So long, I do need coffee though. That in my survival cup, and then I'm good. Bit of coffee, I'm good to go. Yeah. So, you know, other people have a really big one and they need lots of sleep. So when we start to understand our own needs profiles, then we can start to understand the children's needs profiles. To think more along the lines of needs profiles, I highly recommend Dr. William Glass's book on choice theory and, of course, any of his work. As far as the cups go and practical strategies around working in education and care, we nut all that out in the training. And it's really fun to think about and to get to know your own needs profile. And then as soon as you start to understand the child that's challenging you, their needs profile, and you go, oh, he's got a huge power cup like me. Yeah. No wonder we're having issues with each other, because when I'm trying to empty mine up, I'm filling his. When I'm trying to fill mine up, I'm emptying his out. And then when he's trying to fill his up, I'm like, no, don't take my power. When we understand each other's profiles like that, it just gets a whole lot easier.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm guessing that obviously children change while they're with us during that time, or even during the day, possibly, that those cups will change size. There will be occasions where they'll need different sorts of things. And although we talk about children's needs, thinking about it in that physical way and saying, actually, we need to expand his love cup absolutely massively because he's got this going on at home, or... Yes. And having to fill that.
Yes. And what I explain in this training is that if we think of the actual size of the cups as quite static, they stay the same most of the time throughout our lifespan, but they're varying levels of full and empty. Uh-huh. So he might have a really big power cup, but today it's full because he got to do all this stuff with grandma and grandpa on the weekend and they gave him lots of power and control over everything. And then he's come to kindy this morning and it's actually quite full. Or he's had the opposite, and he's had a weekend where he's had no decision, no involvement in the decision-making process about where he goes. He was whipped over to dad's and then mum come and picked him up early because mum and dad had a fight and they're not together. And, you know, he's got no power and no control over his situation at all. And then he walks into kindy and he knows, this is the place where I fill my power cup up. It's safe to do that. Right, all of you guys, you're going to fill my power cup up today. That's happening. So when we're sensitive to whether or not it's full or empty, we start to have a little more compassion and the behavior becomes less challenging to us and more just about what can I do here as an educator, what decisions can I make to fill his cups? It empowers you too, because you realize that you actually can do something about it once you understand it.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that I really liked about it, that it's a very positive message. You're not talking about the negativity. It's very positive. What can we do to help, rather than what can we do to, as you say, manage or squash that behaviour? Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's lots and lots of things we've covered there already, but what would your top tip be for any practitioners or educators listening today?
Yeah, probably fill the love cup first. So connect, your relationship's a priority. Children really can't learn from outside of a healthy relationship of love and trust. So if you want a child to learn from you, and I'm speaking about behavioral learning, then you need to have that relationship with a child first. If you don't have a relationship with the child, don't attempt to manage their behavior. They're not going to learn from you. Just connect with them, build your relationship, fill their love cup in any way that you can work out how, and then work on what we can do. Because once you have a connection with a child, you can see their needs profile better.
Yeah.
Before you actually connect with them, you can't see what cups are big and small and what cups are full and empty. So connect, get attunement, and then go from there.
That's super advice. And that connections, as you say, I think is so basic. It's fundamental. I think it's a fundamental human right, isn't it, really, that you should have somebody to connect to like that. That is absolutely amazing. Have you got some of your resources with you that we could have a look at, please?
Yes, I do, and I'm super proud of our cups kit. So, yes, there is that. I'll just show you. It comes in this cute little bag with all the cups on it.
Oh, look. On your logo as well. That's super.
Yeah, it's pretty gorgeous. And then we've got some reflection cards for just when you want to have a super brainstorming session around the cups, which have questions on them. That's pretty cool. And then there is a workbook that works you through everything that we talk about in the training. And also we have a three-part series webinar that comes with, you get it with the cups kit.
Right.
So you buy the cups kit and then you do the three-part series training, which we run every quarter, every 3 or 4 months. And then last but not least, we have whiteboard posters. Put these in the staff room or wherever you're going to collaborate together with a colleague, and you write cup filling strategies that really worked for you today with our Phoenix support whiteboard marker.
You've even got it branded. That's lovely.
Yeah, it's really cool. And then these are just beautiful. They were designed by an artist and friend of mine, Melissa Underwood, from the Creativity Canvas. So she's done a great job with these. And then, so there's all your posters for your cup filling strategies, and we write them on there to keep it really visual and keep us thinking about the practical strategies that we're using.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's the one we call the bathroom poster, because we often find these motivationals go in the bathroom or in the back of the toilet door around here. So this one says, you can't pour from an empty cup. How do you fill yours?
Oh,
really thinking about your own cups now.
Yeah. Yes. And that's quite important as well, isn't it? That not only you recognise your own cups, but you make sure that yours are full and adequate as well, as you say. With the whiteboards, with the writing on, would you expect to refresh those every day? Is that a constant reflective tool?
Yeah, look, they're particularly good for staff meetings or sitting with a colleague if you don't have a whole staff team, and discussing things and getting them down, putting them up visual, and then just adding to them or changing them as you go. So keep them as dynamic as you need to for a while, and then after you've used them for a while, you might want to wipe them all off and just let them sit there as an art piece. And then come back to it in a couple of weeks when you need reminding. Because sometimes we slip back into some old ways.
Yeah.
And then we need to go back to, right, what was that framework we're using? What's that philosophy? It was really working. I do find, though, that people who've done the CUPS training rarely lose that, because it's such a concrete thinking. And when we do the training, we go right through stories about I talk about Jaden and Sally and two children and their different stories. And when we start to visualize together, that visualization helps us to remember the analogy and the theory for a really long time. So I do find that educators rarely slip back to completely old ways, but sometimes we need reminding to get back into what's those practical strategies I need to try.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I think that's really good practice anyway, just to reflect constantly and just remind yourself that the children have grown a bit, you've got a new cohort, you know, all these things. And we might have had life experiences that have changed us as well. So that constant reflection, I think, is very good practice anyway. I think that's a great idea. Yeah, yeah. That has just been amazing. I'm so pleased that you're able to come onto the summit and tell us all about Phoenix Cups. I just think it's, and I think the pictures are gorgeous. I've not seen those resources before. I think they're beautiful. And as you said, I would have them as artwork. They're just really nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if people wanted to find out about the Phoenix Cups and about yourself and the work that you do, where would they go to?
Yeah, best place is our website, phoenix-support.com.au. There's a resources for educators section there, and in that section is an order form for the CUPS kit. Also, our blog post, you know, you might have picked up that I'm a little opinionated and quite free-flowing with that opinion. So that goes on the blog post. There is certainly one that's relevant to this conversation about filling the Freedom Cup on there, and it's called The Advocate for Childhood. So, yeah, there's plenty of different ways on our website. And, of course, we have a Facebook page and Instagram. It's all connected through there. But please do friend me on Facebook, because I like friends. I'm Sandy Phoenix.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much, Sandy. And what I'll do is the links are on the website, so you can click through next to the video and you'll be able to go straight onto those websites and Facebook page. So that would be really good if you can do that. Thank you very much. And Sandy, thank you so much for joining us today from Australia. It's been an absolute honour and pleasure to talk with you today. And thank you for sharing your resources with us. It's been absolutely fascinating.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Kathy, and I'll speak to you soon.
I do hope so. And thank you to our viewers and listeners for joining us today on the Early Years Web Summit.